Good evening and welcome to Valley Public Radio's new broadcast center. My name is Joe Moore. I'm the director of program content here at the station, and it's great to actually have a live audience for something we do in radio, because usually in radio, we know you're out there, but you're invisible to us, so it's great to connect in this forum. We call it Be Public Live. We hope this will be the first of many of these events that we'll stage in the future at this new facility. We moved in here in May, and this is the first time we've done one of these sorts of events. We have another one that we're planning right now about the provider shortage in Central California that actually is a project of our reporter Carrie Klein, who's here tonight, and a fellowship she has with the Center for Health Journalism at USC Annenberg School. So we're going to be doing a number of reports on that topic and also a forum to hopefully gain some new insight. And that'll be coming up in a few months here at the station. I want to thank all of our partners who helped make this possible, including our partners who help fund our news operation, our listeners, of course, our members, and our foundation partners, including the James Irvine Foundation, the California Endowment, and the California Healthcare Foundation. They allow us to do the type of reporting that brings us those Golden Mic Awards that you see out in our newsroom. So for tonight's event, we want to kick this off and learn a little more about where we are in the world of healthcare, how much things have changed in the Valley from the delivery side since the Affordable Care Act was passed, and now what changes are going to take place still up in the air. But knowing where we are and knowing what's at stake will certainly make us more informed judging where the future path of healthcare is headed. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our panelists and our Jeffrey Hess, our government and public policy reporter, to the Berman Cheney Performance Studio, and then he'll introduce our guest tonight. Come on in.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us tonight. I'd like to introduce our guest. We have joining us Norma Forbes, who's with the Fresno Healthy Community Access Partners. She's the executive director. She has 35 years experience in hospital administration, and she's been with HCAP for 13 years. Thank you, Norma.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Aldo Della Torre. He's the senior vice president of managed care at community hospitals. He's also the CEO of the Community Healthcare Plan. He's got 15 years, in addition to that, with Anthem Blue Cross for the Western Region. And Ruben Chavez, who's the Chief Administrative Officer of Clinica Sierra Vista for Fresno County. He's been with that organization for 4 years, and he has 15 years with federally qualified health clinics, which are very important safety net providers for people who previously didn't have insurance, but now a lot of them do. So let's give them a big round of applause and welcome. Thank you. As Joe mentioned, there's a lot of talk about what's going to happen to healthcare in the Central Valley, in California, and nationwide, but tonight we really want to focus on what has happened. We want to be retrospective, not prospective, and I think these three folks are very in tune to what have been the changes in the healthcare system in California, in the Central Valley, and beyond. So let's get started. I want to start with by asking each one of the three of you, what has been the biggest change, good or bad, that you've seen since the full implementation of the Affordable Care Act in the fall of 2013. Ruben, do you want to start?
Yes, thank you. Clinica Sierra Vista, what we have seen has been a larger amount of patients who now have an insurance. Prior to the ACA, Clinica Sierra Vista saw a large amount of patients who had no insurance. As a federally qualified health center, we and our mission and our passion is we serve the underserved and uninsured. So we've always seen people who don't have insurance. We've always seen people who are uninsured, underrepresented. So prior to the ACA, we've seen these people. They're our patients. They're our community. That's who we want to serve. People who, before the ACA, people who did not have insurance or a method of payment, we would put them on a sliding fee scale based on their financial situation. After the ACA, now more people now have Medicaid through the expansion of Medicaid or have covered California. We saw a large increase in the amount of patients who have Medicaid or Medi-Cal. So in a nutshell, what we've seen is we've seen an increase of people patients who now have a method of payment or health insurance through the Medi-Cal expansion.
Aldo, you oversee the biggest hospital in the region, so I imagine that there's been a lot of changes for you.
Yeah, similar to Ruben, I think the most positive impact, obviously, is that folks now have a level of coverage that they didn't have before, whether it's through Medicaid, and because California chose to expand Medicaid, we see a lot more coverage. The amount of newly eligible Medicaid members, I think, is approximately 300,000 more in over the last 4 years. So I think that's a very positive thing, that folks do have access to insurance. That's the downside has been that it doesn't necessarily, having an insurance card doesn't necessarily require, mean you have greater access. And so what we see as the largest hospital system in the area, and we predominantly see a lot of Medicaid members in our downtown location, we are seeing a huge uptick in emergency room visits because folks who have insurance now, but they simply can't find doctors. And the Valley has a shortage of doctors, as most folks know. And so we've had this big expansion of folks with insurance. Unfortunately, we haven't matched that with the ability to access primary care. And so what you see then is that you see a lot more folks showing up in the ER because they're traditionally, that's where they can get their care.
Norma, I know you have a little bit of a different perspective on this. What do you think has been the biggest change for your organization?
For us, Fresno HCAP, Healthy Community Access Partners, we've seen a lot more adults than we saw in our early years, where we were working very heavily on getting more children in. And we have seen that the issue that we are helping more people with is they have insurance, as you guys have recognized, obviously you're seeing too. But what we are doing are trying to help them navigate the gap that can happen between having insurance and knowing how to actually use it to get to healthcare. And the big effort that we've done, HCAP, is all about access to care, and insurance coverage is simply one barrier that enables them. It's a big barrier, but it still doesn't mean that people know how to use insurance. And what we do see is they have the shiny new insurance card and they take it to the emergency department. So we're trying to help them understand that really isn't the full intent of having insurance.
Well, and that's an excellent place for us to go. There's been the pitch with the ACA is you would have more people insured and you would have fewer uninsured people who don't have uncompensated care. But Aldo, you hit on a great point. There's been a lot of documentation of this increase in ER admissions. Is that a positive or a negative when you're looking at increased ER admissions versus a decrease in uncompensated care?
Well, I think you can say, I wouldn't say it's negative or positive. I would think that it's unfortunate. I think that it's getting folks access to the right care at the right place, right setting. And a lot of times the ER is not the right setting. It's impacted. You have to wait a long time to receive care. And many of these conditions are services that could be seen outside of the ER. And it's the most expensive place to receive your care. So while it's good that folks have insurance and they have, they're not necessarily accessing care at the right point because we don't have the necessary amount of physicians in the community to serve that increased population. So we typically have a ERs are overburdened, folks waiting to get in to see doctors, and I don't think that's good at all. In many of the situations, they could have received their care elsewhere if such care was available, resources.
And so from a balance sheet perspective, not to reduce healthcare too much, just X's and O's, but has it been an improvement in how the finances work out, at Ruben, for you as well?
Yes, I would say it has been a benefit. As I mentioned before, a lot of the patients that we are seeing now, we were seeing before, and before the ACA, a lot of them did not have a method of payment. They would try to give whatever they had, but sometimes they didn't have anything, but we would still see them, and we still see them. After the ACA, like I said, with the increase in Medicaid expansion, now we have a payer-to-bill, and that would be the Medicaid program. So for us, the balance sheet, it's been very good. It's been good for us. But like I said, we've always stayed uninsured before, and we always will continue to see. So I know this isn't the focus of the show, but if this was to go away, the ACA, we will still be seeing these patients at our doors.
Well, and it's an important point you make. Even with the decline of the uninsured, every county in the valley still has about 10 to 12% insurance rate. Right. So there's still a population out there that is seeking care that doesn't have insurance. Right. Aldo, I know your hospital is gigantic. Has it changed how you have tried to balance your payer mix?
Well, I don't think you can really, the payer mix is just what's given to you. You know, we don't get to choose the payer mix. They show up. So as far as to your question about a balance sheet, it's important to know that California probably has one of the worst reimbursement schedules of all the 50 states in terms of what they pay their providers for services. So while it's better to receive something better than nothing, the amount we receive does not cover the care that we deliver. So it's still a net loss. And it's also offset by the fact that, remember, a lot of this was funded by DSH cuts, disproportionate share hospital cuts. So while we were receiving more folks with insurance, there was an offset there. The government took away additional payments we otherwise received through our DSH program. So there is some offsetting that goes there. But net-net, I think that overall the balance sheet would say that it's a positive trend, but it did not make us whole at all.
So a positive trend, but at this point you're underwater compared to what you were with the federal supplemental payments?
Well, I would say we're underwater. I would just say that it nets out against it. It's still positive, the net effect of the two changes, but it was not a wholesale kind of change in the positive nature of the balance sheet as folks would expect. And many of these folks, you know, so we fill up our beds with a lot of folks who are needing care who have Medicaid insurance.
Medicaid, which you pointed out.
Which is Medi-Cal, yeah.
Medi-Cal, which reimburses it, I think, the lowest rate in the country.
The last study I found that they were the lowest of all the 50 states in terms of what they reimburse their providers for the services that are delivered, yes.
Norma, you do a lot of work with reaching out to patients to educating them about insurance and how to go through that. Are you finding that more people are interested in signing up for insurance? Has the availability of private subsidized insurance and expanded Medi-Cal encouraged people to go look for that?
Yes, I mean, we've always found, our work has always found that people want insurance. Our early work was dealing largely with children, undocumented children of farm worker populations here in the Valley. And we did a lot of focus groups and a lot of talking with individuals. And people, we heard differing statements, you know, that farm workers did not want health coverage. We found absolutely the opposite. And I use this with everybody that we work with. The farm workers said, you do not know when you need health insurance. You never know when you're gonna have an accident. You know, farm working is very intensive and there's a lot of opportunities for injuries. But you know, I drive 99 every day from Visalia, and the opportunity to have a car wreck and lose everything that I own is there if you don't have insurance. So, you know, that for us is the message we try to get across to people. I actually don't like insurance, but it is the basis that we have for getting people access to healthcare. So, but, you know, we focus with them on how to use that insurance to stay well and healthy.
And that's a difficult concept to communicate to people sometimes. You're talking about an abstract accident in the future versus a real life pocketbook issue if you're trying to buy food or clothing for your children or school books.
Yes. Yeah. But even the lowest income people that we help, you know, they may not be financially. Now we have seen, you know, people that with having insurance now, I mean, they are able to focus more on how they actually use it. But even the lowest income individuals we've worked with, they want health insurance. They're willing to pay for it some way. Many of them think that in their taxes, in their paychecks, Social Security deductions are insurance coverage. It's like, well, why doesn't that count? That's Social Security. So there's a great deal of misinformation. And as you said, we really work with trying to help people to understand that. We are not paid on a per-person basis. We are funded by grants and contracts that focus on helping people to understand and realize how important insurance coverage is and how important health care is.
Ruben, you also work with a lot of people who were previously uninsured. Are they asking you questions like, what do I need to know about this insurance?
Yes, excuse me. I wanted to add a little bit on what Norma was saying. Clinica Sierra Vista, we've been in existence since 1971. It was part of the healthcare, federally qualified health center, community health center movement throughout the country that was rooted in the 60s. We started out as a farm worker clinic in Weed Patch, California. I'm sure some of you might know where that's at. And from that one clinic, with I want to say maybe 12 employees, we grew to now we are 1,200 employees in both counties, 330 up here in Fresno, and about 800, 900 in Kern, with 26, 28 clinics that provide services to everybody in the communities. So Norma's 100% right when she's talking about farm workers and wanting access and wanting care. What we do, what we have done is we have staff that help people enroll. We enrolled over 12,000 people between the two counties into either Covered California or Medicaid. So that's part of our, I mean, again, we are a nonprofit, mission-driven. We're passionate about taking care of the people in our communities, and that's what we've been doing since 1971. We'll continue to do it to the end of time, hopefully.
What's your perspective on Aldo's point that even with this increase in Medi-Cal and insured patients, there's still a difficulty with making the numbers crunch?
Well, it's always been difficult in the sense of attracting, you know, Aldo was talking about people have insurance and you have an insurance card, but yet there's maybe a lack of providers. And in this area, I think everybody knows that, it's always been a challenge to recruit family medicine doctors. Mm-hmm. Not only has it been difficult to recruit here, but it's also there's also a shortage. I think everybody knows that there's a shortage of family medicine doctors, the pipeline, and Norma can speak to this as well. Some of the innovative things that she's doing is trying to create residency programs so that we can have people who, and that we participate in that program as well, but we can have doctors who do maybe do their residency here and then they want to stay in the community, or they're from the community, gone to medical school somewhere else, and now they can do a residency here in their hometown and stay in practice. So Aldo is correct in saying that, you know, there's a lack of providers, and you know, we try to do whatever we can to maintain people here, keep people here, because we don't want them in the emergency room. Nothing against the hospitals, but that's not where they belong. They belong with their primary care provider. They need a medical home. They need somebody that they trust, and it's not episodic care at the hospital. No, you know, again, no offense. I think everybody
taken for the record.
I think everybody would agree is that we all want our medical home. We all want our provider that we see on a regular basis, and you know, that's what we try to do. But it gets competitive when you're talking about a lack of resources and provider resources.
But Aldo, to that point, I mean, the statistics will show you that there's been a decline in the uninsured rate. Is that the reality you're seeing on the ground?
Yeah, I think that's fair. So folks now have an insurance card. In the Central Valley, that's made up mostly not of the exchange business. It's mostly a Medicaid expansion has created that phenomenon. And again, we don't want to see folks in the ER unless that's the place where they should go for the care they need. And it's very impacted. And again, you have a insurance car from an insurance company, which is the state of California, that doesn't adequately fund the cost of the services. And it's kind of magnified when they access services in the ER, the most expensive place for you to access your care. So we agree with Ruben. We believe that, and we want to support any effort to get folks in to see doctors in the local community. We support ACOs in the market. We support, we have programs that we work with other doctors in the community where they have patient-centered medical homes. And so we are aligned with Ruben 100% in terms of trying to get members to access care with their physician and not in the ER.
Hold that thought on patient-centered medical homes and ACOs. We're going to get that. A lot of the pitch with the ACA was that it would make consumers more price savvy and price sensitive about the healthcare services that they're using. So individual patients are more cautious about how much they're spending in the healthcare environment. Are you seeing that patients are asking about how much it costs for their treatment? Is it the case that people are questioning whether or not they need a medical service based on its price?
So I would say that we haven't observed that behavior at all. There is not this price shopping or tools that they're asking for. And again, a lot of that is because they're coming to the ER, and it's not the nature to try to be able to predict a price in the ER because you don't know what you have. But I would say that expectation is We're not seeing that in the empirical data.
Norma, I'm very curious. You're leaning forward. Yeah. I want to know what your, yeah, what your reaction is.
Getting to my real topic of interest for me. Yeah. Here. In getting people enrolled into health insurance, that is a very price-focused area. People don't want to have to lay out a lot of money to get a health insurance. And, you know, as I said, it's an education or a training focus. In the first round of getting people in to coverage, many of them were sort of focused on, and depending upon where they were enrolling, organizations didn't take time to actually explain to them the differences between the price that they might be paying now and how it was going to translate into the actual care that they would be paying for later. And we saw many, many people who just went for the lowest price cost right now, you know, in terms of, and actually ended up, you know, with these low-level silver plans where many of them were like, you know, we don't have to pay a premium. The insurance company actually told us, you know, we're not even going to bother you billing, you know. But, and then they took advantage with, you know, our advice. Go get your preventive screenings. Look at all the wellness focus that is in this as that you've got. Find out if you're healthy and everything is okay. And lo and behold, they found out that they had many healthcare problems. Many of them never had insurance before. And they had only been through an emergency department, which takes care of an issue, but then sends them back on their, you know, it's like now you're on your own to try to figure out what to do about anything else. So people found out, and this is actually, I think it was very, very frustrating for us that they had healthcare issues that really needed to be addressed, some of them right away. And when they then went to find out what was going to take to have a surgery done in the hospital and their insurance, now was going to, they were going to have to pay $2,000 before they could have the surgery done, then they ended up having to save money to get to that point. And several of them told us, I actually feel worse now. Now I have depression. I know I have a problem. A doctor's told me that I need to have it taken care of right away, and I don't, can't do it. I mean, that's a really sad situation to be in. The good news is that many of those individuals were able to save, and they've had those procedures done now, so they are healthier, they're well, they're happy that they got it taken care of, but there's that big gap between how much they thought they were going to have to pay and what it ended up. And now, you know, they know more about the structure of insurance and how if you have healthcare needs, you're going to have to pay more upfront so that you pay less when you actually have to use the healthcare.
Well, I think it's a fair point for a person that's worried about $100 or $150 a month in premium may not have $4,000 or $5,000 to meet a deductible. Ruben, are you seeing that you have to compete with other providers in the area for people that you talk about, a lot of the people you previously saw? Are you having to change your approach to get them to continue to come to Clinica?
Well, what we see, we may not compete for the patients as much. I would say there are some hospital groups that do have run some rural health centers, and they do a great job. But where we see the competitive, where we have to compete is, again, it's relating to provider resources. Now that we have other, you know, maybe hospital agencies or entities and other federally qualified health centers, we see it a little bit more competitive because there is a shortage of primary care providers and other doctors. So that's where we really see the competitiveness is in that aspect of it.
And are people asking you about price? Are they price shopping?
Well, I was going to talk about that. We don't really get a lot of price shopping. What we get a lot is what Norma was talking about is, I've never had insurance before. What do I do with it? How do I access? What's a referral? How do I get a referral? Who can I be referred to? That's what we're getting. We're getting a lot of questions on how to actually utilize healthcare and how to, you know, now they have access, how do you utilize it? And I know this isn't the topic of this discussion, but we're also seeing, because of the possibilities that might happen soon, is what am I going to do now? Now they're going to take my card away from me. And we actually have, we do have behavioral health services, LCSWs and some other
acronyms.
Licensed clinical social workers who help people with their behavioral health issues. We actually have people coming in now who are stressed, depressed, because they're not sure what's going to happen when if their card gets taken away. So So in terms of cost shopping, you don't see that so much, but we see more, how do I utilize this car? What kind of services can I get? And now with the threat of it maybe taken away, we see people who are stressed and depressed about it.
Aldo, you're shaking your head, so I'm assuming you're kind of agreeing.
Oh, yeah.
No price shopping going on right now.
I do agree, but I think there's reasons for that. I think that in the Medi-Cal program, you're not as price sensitive because most of your services are covered. There's not this co-payment issue. The second piece under the Affordable Care Act, there's this essential benefit package, which requires your insurance plan to cover at least 60% of the costs. And then there's mechanisms like out-of-pocket maxes, so you can never pay more than a certain amount a year before it's covered. So, but the last piece, I think this gets kind of to what you're seeing on these exchanges, is the insurance companies have developed narrow networks. So they've narrowed the number of doctors and hospitals you can access for this product, trying to save money. So if you have a narrow set of choices, it's kind of hard to shop, right? If you have one, you can't really shop for services if your choices are very narrow. There's not a lot of competition there.
So. Is that a market force that was in place beforehand, or is that a result of the Affordable Care Act?
It's a result of the Affordable Care Act.
Or did the Affordable Care Act accelerate a pre-existing market force?
Well, it accelerated, and I think it's a new phenomenon, because going into the exchanges, all the insurance companies felt that to be you're competing against other insurance companies. And there used to be a saying when I was with my previous employer was that price would drive the choice. So if you had the lowest price, you would get the most selection. People were price sensitive in that group. And so to get to that that price, the insurance companies began to look at their panels of physicians in hospitals, and if they felt they were outliers, they would just remove them from the benefit plan. So you couldn't access them if you wanted to maximize your benefit.
And so, I think, go ahead.
No. So it was a tool to get to that lower price point.
And I think this is a good point to going back to what you were talking about. The Affordable Care Act is full of all kinds of cost-saving experiences, accountable care organizations, patient-centered medical homes, teaching health centers. I could go on. It's alphabet soup. Don't worry about it. Have any of the three of you, and Norma, I know this kind of excludes you a little bit, but have any of the three of you tried any of these cost saving? Wait, you can go first.
Don't exclude me. Yeah.
I mean, have you tried, like, have these new found opportunities, these experiments, have you tried any of them? Have any of them worked? Have any of them failed?
Well, I'll go first because we did start, Fresno HCAP started 4 years ago teaching health center. And so we were the sponsoring organization for it, and we worked with Clinica Sierra Vista as partners on that. Teaching Health Center is a HRSA-funded new project that came about actually as part of the ACA. The funding came through that program to increase the number of primary care doctors working in rural and underserved areas. And we had four doctors per year, medical school graduates that we were training, so we had a total of 12, and had a tremendous success rate, higher than doctors that train traditionally in hospital-based programs. We had beat everything here in Fresno County. We had four doctors that graduated last year. Three of them are practicing here in the Valley, in FQHCs. One of them had a family emergency and moved to Florida, but is practicing in an FQHC there. So that is four doctors in a residency program with 100% retention in FQHCs. Primary care. We currently have a new class coming out here in June that will graduate, and they're just now doing their commitments to where they're going to practice. And I don't actually know all of them, but today two of them have committed to working in Fresno County in rural FQHCs.
So success, at least on the provider front.
Yes, it's getting more providers. And I feel extremely strongly that if we want prevention and wellness, we need to have more primary care providers. We're so short in that area. We're short doctors everywhere, specialists too. But if we want to keep people out of the hospital and focus on prevention and wellness, we need primary care providers. We need more, not just doctors, but more of everything, nurse practitioners, everything to support adequately people in all the various needs that we all have. And I think that's part of the shortages are amplified by we have all these divisions of healthcare professionals.
Gentlemen?
In our Kern County services or Kern County clinics. We have a residency program as well, the Rio Bravo residency program, where we actually have six residents, family medicine residents in each year, and we have 3 years, so we have 18. And we're finding very similar numbers. We're going to graduate our first class, and we have providers who are already going to stay with us. So, and we did participate in the program that Norma had up here in Fresno. It was successful. So federally qualified health centers have to look for innovative ways like that. We have to find something different to do than just, you know, try to recruit from outside or try to recruit from within the area. We have to find methods or new opportunities like residency programs. It just makes sense for everybody. So yes, we've tried those, and we're going to continue trying. We have a very successful Rio Bravo residency program in Kern County. It's affiliated with UCLA. It's our program down there, and we're doing a great job.
Aldo, are you guys taking the spaghetti approach, throwing it all at the wall and finding what sticks?
No. You know, if you asked about the success of ACOs or accountable care organizations, I think it's a mixed bag nationally.
And briefly, just explain for the audience what an accountable care organization is, please.
That's kind of where a member, a patient, we call members, get assigned to a doctor, and they follow your care. And the difference is that instead of just treating you when you're sick, it's a proactive approach to keeping you healthy. So they will reach out, make sure if you weight, heart, blood pressure, remote monitoring. They assign a nurse to you just to call in to see how you're doing. So what they try to do is to keep you stable and healthy so you don't get to an acute phase for treatment. So I think one physician I worked with said it very simply, it's more about providing care, not treatment. And it's kind of gives you a place where you feel like you have an advocate and so they will, you see them when you're well, and you speak to them when you're well, not only when you're sick. It's kind of the concept. And they help you navigate a very complex system of care. So these programs, while Community Medical Center itself does not have an ACO program, we do support those in the community. So if you know community medical providers, I think they go by Peachwood Northwest, those folks, they have a very successful, what they call an enhanced primary care program. They've contracted directly with Fresno County, and they've been very successful in helping them manage their costs, especially folks who have chronic conditions. But I would say nationally, it's a mixed bag. The studies would say sometimes they work, sometimes they haven't. And it really depends on, you know, the area of the state that you're dealing with. But we locally have supported those initiatives. I've actually established 15 to 20 when I was with Anthem Blue Cross across the state. Again, mixed results.
What percentage would you say were successful?
I would say about 60 to 70% were successful, and it really depended on whether the member wanted to engage. Remember, you have a choice as a patient or a citizen that if the doctor's reaching out and wants to give you this extra additional care, you may say, I don't want to engage, I don't want to be part of it. So a lot of, we saw the correlation between a successful ACO was members or patients that saw this as a value proposition and took advantage of it, as opposed to, why are you calling me? Please don't call me, kind of thing. So a lot of it has to do with the consumer seeing value and engaging in the program.
I have a few more questions I want to move through real quickly before we open it up to audience comments, questions. Aldo, you made a great transition point here, though. A part of the Affordable Care Act was attempting to move from a fee-for-service to a fee-for-outcome model. Of the three of you, have you seen any success with moving from strictly fee-for-service, doctor does procedure, gets paid, to doctor does procedure, patient has positive or negative outcome, doctor gets paid commensurately? Has that had any impact on the Valley healthcare model?
I haven't seen that.
So no, it hasn't. There's no transition there.
We haven't seen outcomes. We're looking for outcomes in terms of health insurance. It can be traced directly to improving people's health care. And that we haven't seen. We know people are, you know, doing their preventive screenings and their wellness, but we haven't really had enough time to be able to track whether or not that's made a big improvement in their actual health care.
So too soon to tell. Aldo, Ruben?
Yeah, we do participate. There's various forms of this volume to value kind of moniker, if you will. And so our hospitals today have been under some type of incentive. You know, we get paid, for example, a case rate. So if the service requires you to stay 4 days, you get paid the same amount as if it takes 10 days. So there is a level of risk there in terms of being efficient. We also here in California, and I would say that we have a very unique model compared to the rest of the states, just for the audience. We've been living under this thing called capitation since the 1980s, which capitation is they pay me $80 every month for every person assigned to me, regardless of what it costs. So I'm assuming the risk of making sure that I manage your care successfully under this budget approach. So California has been more successful, I think, than the rest of the countries because we've been in this market for a while, even before the Affordable Care Act. So we were probably the most prepared for that. So I think what you're seeing, though, is not mandatory requirements shifts, but these pilot programs that are taking incremental steps to get to that place. But I don't think it's wholesale. I think probably about 20% or 30% of the reimbursement that occurs in California is probably what you would consider a value base as opposed to traditional volume.
As a federally qualified health center, we get paid a little bit differently on our Medicaid reimbursement. We get paid by the prospective payment system, which is a totally different way that we get paid. However, there has been discussion that might be eliminated, and we would move towards more of a quality model. As it is now with managed care Medicaid, we have a lot of guidelines that we have adhere to, and a lot of auditing, and we are there are incentives for improved quality that we provide.
So there's been economic analysis that the ACA has led to something like 17,000 new jobs in the Central Valley. For each of your organizations, have you hired new people, and how many? Don't all jump at once.
Yeah. Well, my organization consists of 5 people. We have had 5 people.
Well, it'd be a 20% increase if you hire one more person.
And no, we have not hired more people.
It's probably more relevant for Aldo and Ruben, yeah. Especially with, I mean, I know Clinica is big in Kern County, bigger in Kern County than it is in Fresno County, but...
Yeah, I don't have actual numbers. I can give you a directional answer, and the answer is yes. We've had to hire more staff because, again, our hospitals are at full capacity because of the additional business that's arriving through the ER. And there all these programs and all these new regulations require people to be audited, be compliant, so it requires you to hire additional staff as well.
But that would be administrative staff, not something that people would consider doctors or nurses.
Correct. And in California, we you're not allowed to actually employ physicians unless you're another physician. So sometimes folks don't know that the physicians that see you in the hospital are independent contractors. They're not employed by the hospital.
Well, and once you build the new tower, you guys will be hiring a lot of people.
Hopefully there's money for that.
Yeah. Ruben?
I would say that we have seen an increase in hiring staff.
But you don't have a number?
I don't have a number, but we are growing in Fresno. We are soon to open a few more clinics. I'm not sure if you've heard with Fresno Unified, we're going to open up 6 more school-based health centers in the next 2 to 3 years. So we are seeing job growth and we are seeing expansion. So I don't have exact numbers, but I would say yes.
And here's the fun one I'm sure y'all have been waiting for. If you had a magic wand and you could change anything about the American healthcare system, this is not limited just to the Affordable Care Act or to how the system runs today. It could be anything. What is it that you would change?
Well, I'll kick off. I would change, there's so many things that could be changed, and there's so much need for improvement in both the insurance industry and our healthcare delivery system and, you know, the whole gamut. But I really think today, with the magic wand, I would have our politicians make sure that they are focused on the patients and the families they serve and not look at the cost savings or what we're supposed to be achieving. I think cost savings are very important and a part of doing business, but I see that they're more focused on their partisan politics and not on the needs of the people for healthcare.
There's a lot. You know, this is another segment, just so you know. You know, I think there's little things you can do. You know, I think it's just overly complicated for folks. And anything you can do to simplify it and get folks access to care in a simple manner, I think it would be helpful. You know, and I'll give you an example. The system wants us to be more coordinated. They want us to work more effectively together. But yet there's certain laws and barriers that prevent that. So I was mentioning physicians, you know, hospitals and physicians can't be in an employment relationship. So we're kind of always at odds. So if we want to bring physicians to the community because we think they're necessary, we just can't go out and employ them and bring them here. And so I think it creates a situation where you, you're not able to solve the problem because of certain laws that may be a little bit, and maybe folks would have a different point of view, a little archaic. Other states are able to do that. In California, we're not. We have limited situations where we can do that. I shouldn't say all the time, where a layperson can employ a physician in typically academic medical centers because they're faculty and they're teachers. But I would say, you know, a general rule would be if we could just simplify healthcare a little bit for the consumer, I think that would go a long way because I think they would engage more in the system, in the process, and I think that would lead to, you know, better outcomes and again, more engaged consumer.
The irony is that simplification is complicated.
It is, yeah, but I have many ideas on that.
Ruben,
magic wand. I would say that to make it easier for the patients, you know, we are patient-centered. We're mission-driven. We're there for people. We're there for the underserved. And anything that can make it a lot simpler for them. One child has Medicaid. One child has SCHIP. One child has this. One child's uninsured. It's a patchwork. And you know, you've been doing this for 35 years. You've been doing this for 20-plus years. And it's even complicated for us. Mm-hmm. Just imagine your everyday patient who maybe have limited education. It's hard to maneuver the system. It's hard to maneuver. So if we had a single payer where people didn't have to worry about who was going to pay or what was going to pay or what program I have this month, what program I don't have next month, what does child number one have, what does child number two have, if they were just able to go to the doctor and get care, that's what I would like to see. I would just like to see people be able to access care and be able to get the services and the care that they need.
Ruben and Norma getting very magic with their magic wands. Yes. All right, we said we'd keep you for about an hour. We have about 15 minutes left. Do we have a microphone for audience guest questions? People want to?
I think we're in a small enough room.
Small enough room? All right. Yeah, if you speak up, I'll probably
I'll take it first.
Go ahead. What's the question?
My question is you, all three of you are involved in different levels. I'm a retired pharmacist. I practiced for 40 years.
Thank you.
Working at giving back to the community in some way, but I can't quite find access. So my question is, and there are a couple of other pharmacists here with me, what role would you see of the pharmacist being involved in your programs? You've done a residency program with Ruben here. There's now a pharmacy school here that has people that would be available to do that. I think it's important for them to grow up together. So my question is, Would either of you go out and say, okay, we need to have a pharmacist be involved in our programs to work at your clinics, or work at your ACO or your patient-centered medical home, to take care of that issue instead of putting it on somebody else's shoulders to say, you have a nurse, because they're providers and pharmacists are not providers yet under the law. So would you be willing to take a risk on putting a professional there who knows about the medications, which contributes significantly to the extra visits that they do in the hospital, to put them on your staff and put them into your program?
Can I? I'm chomping at the bit on this one.
And if I could tack a rider on there, also optometrists, dentists are not included in a lot of healthcare plans. So Neil makes an excellent point about pharmacists. Yeah.
I know pharmacists are willing to be part of the team. Right. We can't get in the door because we're not considered providers. The first question I get when I go to talk to somebody is, who's going to pay for it? But I can't bill for it because I'm not considered a provider. They want us to do services, but not consider us as providers. So we can't get in there unless somebody would open the door and say, well, we'll take you on anyway.
I'll take you on anyway. Okay, we have a pharmacy. We have a pharmacy at we have a center at Elman Jensen, which is southwest Fresno, and our pharmacy is staffed by Dr. Amy Higa, and we open from 8:30 to 5:30 every day, and the pharmacy services are for all of our patients throughout our 10 different clinics. They're able to access the medications through our pharmacy. We get 340B drug pricing, which is so we're able to pass the savings on to our consumers, our patients. We have a relationship with the university. They have a Dr. Luma Munji, who is at our Elm Center 2 days a week providing clinical pharmacy services. She's bringing the students over from the university and they're shadowing her. We also have students from the university who are in our pharmacy shadowing our pharmacists. So we also provide dental services. We have dental, we have behavioral health, we have x-ray, we have a little bit of chiro, we do some podiatry. So we try to do everything. But pharmacy, yes, we have pharmacy and we want to open more.
It's not just the commodity, correct?
Correct. Oh, correct. Correct.
Just the drugs.
It's a partnership.
So the issues, completely support what he just said. In fact, you know, medication therapy management is something that we see as kind of a game changer. A lot of folks who are discharged bounce back to the ER because they didn't follow the instructions of the medication, didn't understand it, didn't get the prescription filled. The successful accountable care organizations typically will embed a pharmacist as the care team member. And generally when we look for members who most benefit from an ACO program, it is folks who are on two or more chronic conditions and are probably on three or four different types of medication. Medicare requires you to cover that service now for their managed care members. In California, the scope of services for pharmacists has been greatly expanded. I think the challenge is not that the academic folks, myself, the administrators, we are wholly sold on the idea of the pharmacist being a part of the team. I think we run into problems sometimes, and the young ladies here left can acknowledge this, is there's this physician kind of rub, you know, that's my patient. What's the pharmacist's role versus the physician's role? At least that's been my experience. But if you asked me as an insurance executive and also as a hospital administrator, we are very, very bullish on pharmacists. In fact, we wanted to embed them in our ER and make it a requirement that if you are discharged, you don't leave the hospital until you've sat down with the pharmacist to go over your medications, because the evidence will suggest that you are less likely to bounce back to the ER if you've had that visit.
Jeff?
Although I want to follow up on something you mentioned, the Republican plan that's out there right now, the American Healthcare Act, who knows what's going to happen in this vote tomorrow or changes, but one of the things that Republicans have been very adamant about is that pre-existing condition, the ability of to deny coverage due to a pre-existing condition is not going away. Yet they are talking about changing the 10 essential health benefits. Mm-hmm. Can you describe, from your perspective, what the significance of that, how do those two things work together? Because if I'm not required to treat your pre-existing condition, what good does it mean if I can get that insurance, but I'm not required to treat that or to cover that treatment?
Yeah, so this is my view on that. I think what they are trying to do is try to give consumers a choice to buy a plan that is not a 60% actual value plan. I mean, that's the lowest point you can buy today.
Explain what 60% actuarial value is.
That your insurance plan must cover at least 60% of your expenses. It has to be that. That's basically, you can't sell anything that covers less than that. I think what they're trying to get at is the issue of affordability. And so they're getting to affordability by reducing the benefit. And so that makes the CBO analysis look better. That gives the idea that consumers now are more in charge and they're not being dictated to. They want, I remember the Republicans, particularly the Freedom Party, are, you know, really staunch supporters against entitlement programs, not opponents, I should say, against entitlement programs. And so what they're all about is let the consumer choose. Why are we restricting the type of plans that they have to buy? So let's open it up. If somebody wants to buy a 40% actuarial value plan because they're an attorney in Beverly Hills and their income will allow them to do that and they just want catastrophic coverage, why are we forcing folks to buy a much richer plan? So I think ultimately for the policy debate, I think translates into, now they could point to lower costs. But it's a function of a plan that shifts more of the costs onto you, the consumer. But it also, from an ideology standpoint, it's let the consumer decide what they want to buy. Big government shouldn't tell you what you have to buy. And I think that's where we're coming from. That's the motivation for that debate.
I have a question. Insurance companies, do you feel that people having insurance has driven up the cost of healthcare. And the reason why I ask, I have two veterinarian kids, and I know that CT scan and that ultrasound costs the same for them versus in a hospital or in a clinic, and yet the retail charge is astronomically different.
You know, I don't think it's a function of insurance. I think it's in the pure sense, I mean a binary, having it, not having it. The issue we struggle with here in the Valley is community medical centers. About, I would say 75% of the people that walk through our door are covered by either Medicare or Medicaid. And those government programs set the prices, and in all cases, they don't cover the costs. So what you find here is that for the other 25% of the population that walks through your door who has a private commercial insurance plan, you get to negotiate those rates. And so what you see is this massive cost shift. Because this is not being funded over here, the only way we can make it pencil is we have to charge people with private insurance that much more to make up for the shortfall. Then that's why you see the prices. I think that's the primary driver of that is you're seeing all hospitals do it. They just cost shift to the insurance company to make up for the shortfall of the government payments. There's a lot of other reasons why, competition, other things. Physicians wanting, I think when I started it was like 32 slice CT, and now it's up to like 640 slice, right? And so the doctors want the newest technology, and as a hospital, again, you're not employing that physician, you're just trying to create an environment where the physician would like to practice in your facility, and they typically want the best equipment, and that obviously is quite expensive. The other issue we have, and again, this is not a debate about unions or non-unions, but we are a highly regulated company. Most of our most hospitals have are nurses that are unionized, and so those obviously that affects your costs. And the additional thing is there's a lot of regulations about, you know, nurse staffing ratio. So it's not necessarily, it's pretty expensive to run hospitals these days. And so again, if 75% of your folks walking through the door are not receiving the amount of money you need to care for them, then you shift the cost to the people who are private insurance. And then I think that's where you see these large rate increases.
I know the question of education has come up multiple times here with the group tonight. And I'm one of the other retired pharmacists in the room. And even my very well-educated friends call me regularly for questions about how to access health care, how to find the best doctor, you know, medication questions. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is, I'd like each of you to comment on what we could do in our public school system to make sure that people are that more ready to make healthcare decisions after they get out of school.
Well, let's start with that. We are, in addition to being a teaching health center, and I do want to comment on pharmacists, because I believe the vision I have for a teaching health center was that it is not just family medicine residents, but pharmacists and an interdisciplinary team is created that trains, goes together as a whole group, nurse practitioners. That's a way I think we get more health providers all at one time. It takes a long time to train a doctor, but we could train these other professions at the same time. So I would like to, I think that's an opportunity with an innovative program like a teaching health center. But in addition, we are an area health education center in AHEC, which is another federally funded program that has been around for a long time in terms of pipeline programs. And that is looking at focusing on going into the schools and working with schools to be able to identify, get people interested in healthcare professions. I think that could also be incorporated as that work is done in doing health literacy and health education for people to further understand kids, to get them aware of, you know, what actually health insurance means and what health coverage. So many of the kids end up trying to help their parents you know, with healthcare issues, that maybe that could be a way that that could be incorporated. There are AHECs all across the country, area health education centers.
It's an interesting question. I really gave much thought. So I'm sitting here trying to think about it. And so this is kind of off the cuff. I think, you know, you might start with requiring that folks going through medical school or in the medical profession get some education in terms of how the business side works, you know, because a lot of times they're going to you or they're going to their physicians, but healthcare is extremely complicated and it changes, it evolves a lot. And so I don't know if you could put it into curriculum so by the time they actually left and got ready to access the system, remember, they're usually, if you're young, you're not accessing the system that often, that the material is still relevant. But I do think you can at least start by ensuring that nursing schools, medical schools, all provide some level of education course on all these acronyms we use in healthcare and the complexity of it. But I think there are things that we can do. Again, you know, benefit plans should be a little bit easily understandable. And, you know, as far as educating the individual consumer, I don't know if that would be impactful, only because I don't know if at that you're probably dealing with folks that are very youthful and they're not really thinking about healthcare because they don't really access it that often. But I think you could make a dent in it with educating the provider, person delivering the care, that could help them navigate the system a lot better if they understood it.
This is off the cuff as well. there are programs now that are having children go through pipelines, like Norma was talking about, local. But you're talking about how do you educate the average consumer, and how do we do that in schools? Don't know the answer. I mean, what Otto is saying is correct. You know, we can try to educate maybe junior high and high school, but guess what? They're young, they're healthy, they're probably not going to access health care for maybe till a few years after that, and they may have forgotten how the system works, or the system may have changed. So
there are things like preventive nutrition, which is
And I think we could do that at the health centers, and we can do that at the hospitals, and we can do it, you know, we can have nutrition classes, we can have classes on how to give your insulin, classes on health education for asthma. And a lot of community health centers or fairly qualified health centers do have health educators who go out to the communities and teach people, lay people, teach people how to, in very basic language and very simple terms, on how to take care of themselves or how to prevent things.
I think we have time for one more.
I'm just going to add, though, that the public health department in Fresno County has a health literacy program underway right now, and they're working with, you know, community members.
And
could each of you estimate what you feel the impact might be on your particular organization if the bill currently in the House of Representatives were to pass and be signed into law?
Not my question. It was an audience question.
I'll take that. Like I mentioned before, Clinica, we've been around for 46 plus years, and we've always served people in the communities that don't have anywhere else to go. So with or without the ACA, we're going to be here. We're not going anywhere. We will be here. We will continue to provide services the best way we can. And again, we're mission-driven. We're passionate about what we do. And financially, it may hurt. But guess what? We'll still be there. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah. I think the word I would use is it's kind of devastating, particularly for the Central Valley, the block grant process or the per capita caps and what's all involved there is, if you look at the analysis, it's, you know, the impact to California is billions of dollars. And what that does is it shuts down the ability for reinvestment in your facility. So we are, you know, it's no secret that our facilities are just bursting at the seam, and so, you know, we would like to be able to build greater accommodations, more towers for the community, but if the funds aren't there, that really prevents us from reinvesting in the infrastructure, because again, the bill as drafted today would have a kind of a significant effect in California's ability to provide reimbursement to us to provide the care. Furthermore, you have a lot more folks that lose access to their insurance and they're still going to need care. like Clinica, we're always going to be there to care for them. But it just makes it harder for us to reinvest in the community through capital projects because the money is just not there anymore.
Yeah, I think it is. It's really very bad for healthcare in California, particularly in the San Joaquin Valley. For us, my organization, what it means, the need for health access, getting people to health care, does not change. I look at it that I think we would be going back to our early roots of helping to look at how we can be creative. We started a healthy kids program here in Fresno County in our beginning days through philanthropic support, where we get a lot of our funding, not from federal or our state funding, and enrolled 15,000 children into health insurance that we created the health plan ourselves. There can things that can be done like that where you take control of the issue. I tell my staff, we didn't ever want to have to go back and do that, but the good news is we know how to do that. We've been there. We've been in the troughs at the low spot. Right now, we've been at the high spot because it's everyone we're able to get health insurance of some type, except for undocumented. But, you know, it's like we're like Clinica. We're not going away. Access to health care is not solved yet. And until that is solved, I can't possibly retire and leave. No, I'm with it.
And I think that's an excellent place to wrap it up. But wait.
The other effect, I know I focus a little bit on the hospital, but the other effect is there's already a shortage of physicians. And unlike folks like Clinica Sierra Vista, who that's their mission, physicians in private practice, a lot of them don't accept Medicaid patients anymore. And this will just make it that much worse. And so the issue of access continues to get worse. And so they show up at the ER. It creates stress for your Ruben's organization. So I think it's just, you know, the impact would be pretty significant both on the hospital side and I think on the availability of physicians to actually continue to see Medicaid members. And so it puts a stress on who's left over to do that.
And I'll just ask quickly to wrap it up as a yes-no question. You guys hate this kind of question. A yes-no question, are we going back to 2008 before this all happened?
I say no.
No?
I say no.
I think it's possible that we could go going back that bad. I hope I'm wrong, but we're prepared to face that reality.
Well, if that's what happens, I hope you all tune into KVPR because we're going to be having a lot more coverage about what's coming up with the American Healthcare Act and its future and its impact on California. I really appreciate everyone coming out tonight. I definitely want to thank Norma Forbes with the Fresno Health Community Access Partners, Aldo Della Torre, the Senior Vice President of Managed Care at Community Hospitals, and Ruben Chavez, the Chief Administrative Officer for Clinica Sierra Vista in Fresno County. Let's give them all a big round of applause. Thank you. Thank you.